In Chicago, you know that all sports rock. The Bears, Hawks, Bulls, Cubs, and Sox. Pick your favorite, you can choose. As long as the Packers lose. For everything you need to know, it's Bill Swarski Sports Talk Chicago. Bill Swarski Sports Talk Chicago.
Hey everybody, welcome to another edition of Bill Swarski Sports Talk Chicago. This is your hosts, Alex and Sean. On this episode, we have a lot of Bear stuff to unpack. We've got Cubs moves, White Sox moves, talking a little basketball and hockey. But first, I'd like to thank our sponsor, the Rockford Ice Hogs. If you're not familiar with the Rockford Ice Hogs, they're the AHL minor league affiliate of the Chicago Blackhawks. What does that mean for you? You could see the stars of tomorrow today at family-friendly, affordable prices. The season is going on right now, so make sure you head on over to icehawks.com, get yourself a hat, shirt, jersey, tickets, and more. Tell them Swarski Sports sent you. Oh, boy. That game, that Bears game last night, was tough to watch. Some of these games you're watching and you're angry and you're miserable. Some of them you can watch it just being dead inside. The one last night was painful. It was tough.
Yeah. You know what's really, really funny? Just for the hell of it, I just went on YouTube and I just searched the word McCaskey. Okay? Just McCaskey in the search bar. You know what the first video that popped up is?
No.
It's the Virginia McCaskey is pissed off with struggling Bears from NFL.com. Something that was said 10 years ago. Do you remember that press conference with Ted Phillips and George?
Yep, very much so.
We are approaching the 10th anniversary. And since that press conference, we have one division title, two measly playoff appearances, zero playoff wins, and a whole bunch of losing seasons. By the way, we are also on our second 8-plus game losing streak in two of the last 3 years.
Do you want to hear a sad statistic?
Have at it.
So, what team was the worst team in the history of MLB?
The White Sox.
And when was that?
This year.
Since September 23rd of this year, the White Sox have almost twice as many wins as the Bears.
Oh, no.
5 White Sox win, 3 Bears wins.
Oh my God. Oh my God.
That is so sad.
That's beyond sad. It's beyond sad. And Sean, the thing about these last 2 weeks is even in the painful Matt Eberflus losses, we came away with stuff to at least look at. Like the way Caleb Williams played against Green Bay and Minnesota at home, and how Caleb Williams played in the second half in Detroit, you know, before everything went to shit at the end. You know, you were able to take away some of that stuff. And, you know, even early in the season when Caleb was struggling, you could say, okay, at least our defense is playing decent. You know, mostly beating up on bums, but hey, you still played pretty good against the Texans, all things considering. But these last 2 weeks, like, you come out thinking, okay, yeah, sure, like, DeMarcus Walker had a few sacks, Kyler Gordon played well, and what else? Like, what else can you honestly take away? Sure, okay, Caleb Williams has his nice little streak of not throwing a pick. But you saw the way he played last night, and you saw how bad the offensive line is, and I think that's taking a toll on his on the play on the field, because you see the bad footwork, you see the overthrows, and then you see him make perfect throws, and you got Roma Dunze and Keenan Allen just flat out dropping the ball. Just flat out dropping the ball. And this doesn't even start with all the stupid shit. I mean, where do you go from here? Sweat offsides leading to a field goal. Time would have run out. The creme de la creme. Hey, you scored a touchdown. Guess what? Doug Kramer didn't report as eligible. Like, it's just, it's a comedy of errors after a comedy of errors. It is a Hollywood script and not in a good way.
It's evident by what the product on the field is, but also by the comments by Kevin Warren, is this team lacked discipline and there was no structure, anything for this team. And sure, Matt Eberflus is gone, but you've got a bunch of coaches that are not ready to be a head coach that are running the show, and it's a lot to ask. It's just a shitty situation. And the only good thing that's coming of this is I think the whole universe is now saying, except for Troy Aikman, the rest of the universe is saying, man, Ryan Poles really sucks and he needs to be gone.
Yeah, I mean, the favor he's getting is just completely evaporating. And I gave him more favor than you did throughout the year. But as this goes on, listen, with your third round pick, you picked Kieran Amagaji, who last night stood no chance.
No.
He had no chance last night.
And listen, is they said he was going to be a project.
Yes.
And we all knew he was going to be a project. Then don't start him. Put him
right.
Larry Borum. Larry Borum is not good, but at least he has started for you in the past. He is
right.
at least a capable backup. He's not going to be good, but Kieran Amagaji was dreadful. I mean, that might have been the worst left tackle play I've ever seen.
I was literally just going to say, I don't remember an offensive line performance from a single player that was worse than Kieran Amagaji last night. And part of me kind of feels bad for him. This was a guy who was just, it's like, hey, little freshman, you're going to go to the JV team and you're going to start. You know that everyone knew that he was a dead man walking on that field last night. And not only was he getting, just blown up like he was a turnstile, but you had the penalties too, which were very, very costly in many, many ways. It just, the one sack where Caleb Williams fumbled, Caleb Williams had no chance.
No, and what's
he was
hilarious
dead.
Is like 2 seconds before that, Troy Aikman was talking about, Tom Brady would just will no sacks. Tom Brady would do this. I mean, Caleb Williams, he's just holding on to the ball too long. Tom Brady wouldn't do that. And then Caleb Williams gets sacked in like a half a second. Like as fast as the guy from the Vikings could get there, as he got there with zero resistance. Like what was he supposed to do? And then you see our center, a couple weeks ago, people were like, well, he's gotten better as the year went on. These last 2 weeks, he has been as bad as he's been in a while. And last night, he got bowled over more than once. Like, what are you supposed to do when your center just gets blown up on every play and your left tackle just watches people go by? Like, what are you supposed to do? Like, I feel so bad for Caleb Williams. And when RG3 said he should have forced his way out of Chicago, I'm walking back my comments about it, and maybe he should have.
I mean, you see the way he was getting hit last night. And no, again, it wasn't a great game for Caleb Williams, and there were times he should have taken that check down, and he didn't. And there were times the footwork was bad, and there were times he overshot his receiver. There was a lot of that last night. It was not a great game for him. But there were so many instances where he had no chance. And this has to take a toll on a young rookie quarterback in the NFL for the first time. This is what kills development of quarterbacks. And hey, if he keeps playing at the pace he's playing statistically, he's going to end with pretty respectable numbers for a rookie. But so much of this could have been avoided. He could be taking bigger strides and not being, mocked and laughed at by people if you would have done a better job of protecting him, and you just didn't. You flat out didn't. And Ryan Poles has to take full responsibility for this offensive line. And I know in the past we said, well, if you could just fix this area, fix area. You know what? Redo the whole damn thing, top to bottom. Darnell Wright is the only player on that line right now I would keep. That's it. Everyone else, redo the whole thing. I want a new center. I want new tackles. I want new guards. Just outside of Darnell Wright, redo the whole thing. The whole thing.
Yeah.
It's not good.
I'm there with you. It's just that line is not good. I mean, I'll say, like, it sucks because Braxton Jones is okay. He is right around an average offensive lineman. And the problem is to upgrade over who was the guy that we had that went to Washington that was like a seventh round draft pick that was left tackle for a long time. I can't remember his name.
Oh, Charles Leno?
No, it wasn't Leno.
I know who you're talking about. It's on the tip of my tongue.
Yeah, so he was another one. It's like, yeah, you want better, but it's really hard to upgrade over a mediocre tackle. And so if Braxton Jones is your starter next year and you significantly upgrade at all three interior positions, I can live with that. I can live with it. I won't be happy about it, but if you upgrade significantly all three interior positions, then I can live with him for another year. I don't want to sign him to a second contract because I don't think he's worthy of the money. But buys you another year to finish because it's really tough to upgrade all four spots of that offensive line.
Right, right. And I mean, I'm just looking at it right now. Just looking at the roster right now. At the offensive line itself. So, like I said, Darnell Wright, he's your best guy. You know, Coleman Shelton. Blah. Doug Kramer, I don't know. I don't think he's going to be around much longer. Right? I don't know. Tevin Jenkins, I don't think they're paying him the money that he's going to want. I don't know what you think, but I don't think he's coming back.
No.
I gonna keep Ryan Bates around? Maybe his depth. No, Andrew Billings is on IR. Bill Murray is on IR. I mean, it just, you look at this whole thing and you need to revamp it, man. You need to completely revamp it. And Matt Pryor, he's 30.
Pryor, for a minute, we were like, okay, he seems like he could be a dependable backup. But like, no, you have got to completely revamp this offensive line. It is terrible. And it stinks so bad is because I think a good offensive coach can mask a bad offensive line to some degree, but a piss poor offensive coach cannot. And we saw that last night is the Bears didn't give Amagaji any help for the beginning of the game. And it just, you're like, how do you not do that?
Right.
And
by the way, you mentioned a left tackle that went to Washington, right? A few years ago.
Is that Leno?
It was Leno. Yes.
Okay.
It was Leno. Cause he was a Pro Bowler in 2018. I thought it was Leno. So
yeah, Leno, I was confusing him with the guard that we let go.
James Daniels?
James Daniels. But no, it was Leno.
Okay.
Leno, yeah. So Leno was he had one really good year, and he was like mediocre most years, but it was and everyone's like, man, we need to upgrade over him, but it's really hard. It's really hard to upgrade to from a mediocre offense or left tackle to a really good one. Every team wants a really good left tackle. There's not enough of them to go around. And it's not as pronounced when you have, you know, but it's a very similar situation to quarterback, where sure, there's a lot of quarterbacks, but most of them stink. And the ones that are really good are difference makers. And, you know, I would love to get a bookend left tackle. And that's, you know, maybe they'll be able to do that in the draft, but they've got a lot of work to do because they've got to start in the trenches.
On both sides of the ball, it's criminal how bad it is in the trenches, because every team in the NFC North is going to bowl over you, because every other team in the NFC North thrives in the trenches. They thrive. Three of the best teams with offensive defensive line play are in the NFC North.
Yeah. And it's, you know, defensive line, like, I like Billings. He's injured. I like Jervon Dexter, but you need a, like, a run stuffer.
Yes. They don't have that.
And you need an elite edge rusher.
Yes.
And I'm torn because, I mean, I guess it's going to depend how the draft, because right now we don't know who's going to declare and how things are going to shape up. But I hate to say it, as bad as the offensive line is in a worse shape than the defense.
You have to protect your quarterback.
But you might have to take a defensive lineman with that first pick, with your top 10 pick, because it is tough to find edge rushers outside that first round that are impactful.
I know, but you need to protect your quarterback.
Oh, I know. What I'm saying is, like I said, I can live with Braxton Jones. If you go out and you've got, it's looking like in the second round, you're going to have two top 10 picks in the second round, is you can go get the best guard and the best center with those picks. And then you go and you've got a metric butt ton of money.
That's the thing. You got a lot of money.
And you sign the best guard you can. And suddenly you have significant upgrade. And then you can live with Braxton Jones another year. Unless there's just an absolute, you know, elite left tackle. Like, if there's a Christian Darrisaw, like, yeah, go get him. But I don't want Ryan Poles to be the one that makes the choices.
I mean, at this point, I don't either. And I think that he's feeling a lot more heat than he did even just a few weeks ago, even before they fired Matt Eberflus. Because you look at the way the last 2 weeks have gone, you look at the state of this offensive line getting worse and worse, and the fact that this losing streak keeps building more and more and more tells you right there that there is a big issue that goes beyond just the coaches. It's the roster, it's the management, it's everything, top to bottom. And right now, as we sit right here, right now, you have three games left. Detroit comes to your building. The Seahawks come to your building. Then you go to Green Bay. I don't know if they'll win another game. Something in my gut says they will win one more game. And I don't know if that's Jared Goff in the cold or a Seahawks team that's decent, not that great. And didn't Geno Smith just get hurt in the last game?
Maybe. I don't know how serious, though.
I don't know how serious it is either. I haven't looked, but the Seahawks are a beatable team. And then with Green Bay, it depends on the seeding. If they can't go anywhere, maybe they rest their guys. But you feel like with the way it's going, they might be playing for seeding. So it's not like that's going to be just a, oh, they're not playing for anything, go out for pride or whatever. So you might finish not having won a game since London. And when was that?
Way too long ago.
Was that even... It was before Halloween, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. You haven't won a game since then. And it was... That's kind of how 2022 went. Now, granted, 2022, you were tanking that year, so there was kind of a reason for that, but the excuse does not exist there now to do that. So...
The Jaguars was October 13th.
Oh, God, yeah. You haven't won a game on American soil since early October. And we are, wow. As we record, a week from now will be Christmas Eve. And when people start listening to this, we'll be a week away from Christmas Day. So you're approaching Christmas Day, and you haven't won on American soil since early October, and you still haven't won, period, since before 2 weeks before Halloween.
Wait, no, yes, the last game you won on American soil was October 6th.
Yeah.
That is so pathetic.
Yeah, I know. I know. It's crazy.
Yeah, but it's... And it... Like, I still think there was some quit in this team. And this cover, too, is bozo because you... How many third and... Like, what is the whole purpose of the cover two? Is you don't give up the big play. And how many, when was the last time you saw the Bears shut down a team on third and long?
Well, it was the same problem as the first game against the Vikings. How many times did they have third and 12, third and 15? Multiple times they converted. You had that soft cushion where you're able to get past one guy, and then by the time you're tackled, you just cross the sticks. Cover two. Is it 2005 still, Sean? Is Rod Marinelli our defensive coordinator?
And if you want to feel sick, is I heard today that Ryan Poles is in favor of bringing in Mike Vrabel, which, all right, you know what? If Mike Vrabel is going to do anything, is he is not going to be outcoached. That's one thing. You're not going to come in there and outcoach him. He's a really smart guy. He's going to bring fire and brimstone and toughness to the team. But how, when the whole purpose is just to get a quarterback and get your quarterback in line. Do you know who the offensive coordinator that he is linked to bringing with is?
Wasn't it Josh McDaniels?
Josh McDaniel. Well, why on earth?
I think Josh McDaniel is a significantly better coordinator than head coach, but I'm in the camp of it's Ben Johnson or bust.
I am too. If it's not Ben Johnson, then you failed.
I agree. And I 100% agree.
And it's one of those things is if you bring Ben Johnson in and Ben Johnson stinks, then that's just really bad luck because he's the universal, the guy that everybody thinks the Bears should hire.
And he's the guy where if any team right now was looking for a head coach, he'd be the first hire.
Yeah. I mean, I know people are inventing these scenarios of trading for Sean McVay.
It's not going to happen.
0% Sean McVay is getting traded from Los Angeles to the Bears.
It's not going to happen with Sean McVay. It's not going to happen with Kyle Shanahan. It's just not. As much as I would love to have either of those guys, it's not going to happen.
Yeah. Now, if you told me Mike Vrabel was going to come and Mike McDaniel was going to get fired from the Dolphins and he was going to bring him as the offensive coordinator. Now you've piqued my interest and you might convince me to move slightly off of Ben Johnson, but I still think it's Ben Johnson or bust.
Yes. And maybe you can kind of semi talk yourself into like Joe Brady. Just seeing what he does over in Buffalo, but
no, I don't want that. I want Ben Johnson.
I do too. I do too.
Ben Johnson did something with Jared Goff that Sean McVay could not.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sean McVay said, I cannot win with Jared Goff. And now Ben Johnson has Jared Goff as a potential MVP candidate.
Right. Right.
Like that speaks volumes. And
yeah.
I think there's definitely something wrong with Caleb Williams. I think it is just the complete cluster F that was the Bears organization and the fact that he's running for his life. His footwork is awful. And I think Ben Johnson comes in here. They repair that offensive line. Ben Johnson fixes that footwork. And suddenly you will see a night and day. Caleb Williams is this. When is the last time you had a Bears quarterback that every time they drop back, you didn't fear that there was going to be a bad interception? Not in your lifetime.
No.
I go back to like Jim McMahon. It's Caleb Williams when he drops back. Sure, there's some that like, got some defender got his hands on it. Is you don't have that fear. And he very well could break the all-time record for most consecutive pass attempts without an interception.
Yep.
He is not throwing interceptions. Part of me wishes he would, but not at this point. It's been beaten into him to protect the ball. And Matt Eberflus beating that into him. I wish early on they would have let him throw some interceptions. Sure, they suck, but you know what? You learn from them.
Yeah, you learn from them. You take more shots. You're able to kind of, I mean, hey, remember the last interception he threw? Was that the London game? Because remember when he threw an interception in that game and then they got the stop. It didn't cost him. And he immediately came back and drove him down for a touchdown. And the rest of the game, he was just flawless. I mean, we remember how he was able to learn from a mistake like that. I don't mind as much him throwing a pick, as a rookie. But, you look at what he's done overall, and there are plenty of problems you could identify. The deep ball needs to be so much better. But at least you can look and say, when you watch Caleb Williams is... You don't feel like he's going to do something overly stupid. He might not recognize something right away, or he might not be quick enough to identify where the check down is, which is kind of frustrating because I thought mid-season he was getting a lot better at that. But now that looking for the big play when it's not there seems to be an issue. The other thing that I want to point out is we talked about this before, is let's say you get in Ben Johnson. Guess what? Ben Johnson's playbook is your playbook. Mm-hmm. You're still working off the Waldron playbook, which I think should be set ablaze in Grant Park and everyone can come together and join hands and skip around the fire in a circle.
I want to rip pages out of it and shove Georgie in the corner with a purple crayon and let him go to town.
Wait, what? Wait. Wait. So you're going to rip the playbook out.
Uh-huh.
You're going to shove him in Georgie's face. Give him a purple crayon.
I'm going to shove Georgie in a corner.
Okay.
Give him pages and a purple crayon and let him go to town.
Here, have fun.
Over the last five games, Caleb Williams has 8 touchdowns, 0 interceptions. He's completing 65% of his passes, has over 1,000 yards, and in those five games, four were against the top defenses in the NFL, all while being sacked 20 times during that stretch.
Yeah.
This is not on Caleb Williams. This is not, I mean, sure, there's things he needs to do better. This is not on Caleb Williams. I get that you're still working off the Waldron playbook, but Thomas Brown, like, is still making dumb decisions. Like, all right, fourth and one, why are you running DeAndre Swift straight up the middle with Gerald Everett blocking? Well, supposed to block, where he just Olayed somebody. Like, just why? Why are you doing that? Like, you have to be better. Is DeAndre Swift has a skill set, and pounding it up the middle is not one of them. Is he's got to use his speed and shiftiness and get into seams, and he's not gonna move a line. He's not Derrick Henry. You paid him like he's a Derrick Henry, but he's not Derrick Henry.
That was a big topic of conversation online, I felt like, last night. Did you kind of notice that?
Yeah, I mean, it's true. When we signed DeAndre Swift, I didn't love it. I thought they overpaid, but I was like, okay, well, they've got a plan for him, and I thought it was going to be Roschon Johnson with the tough yards, and DeAndre Swift with screen passes and outside runs and going off as a slot receiver and using him like that, like a scat back almost, and Roschon Johnson would be getting the tough yards, and they didn't. They just went, nah, we're just going to do DeAndre Swift with everything. And it was a bad decision. And clearly the front office call, basically Ryan Poles and the offensive coordinator, were not on the same page how they were planning to use that man, because it was bad. They were not aligned.
Yeah, and you know what's interesting is if you look at the numbers for Swift this year, you look at the yards and you look at the touchdowns. Well, if you just look at those two metrics, they look fine. Like, he's got 821 yards in 14 games and 5 rushing touchdowns. Doesn't have a receiving touchdown, but, you know, he's had at least 5 touchdowns every year he's been in the league. In fact, he's had exactly 5 the past 4 years, so if he gets another one, that'll exceed the total of the last 3 years. He needs 3 to tie his rookie year with 8 that he had back with Detroit. But here's the thing, is if you look at the number of attempts and yards per carry, well, it's 221 attempts. His career high is 229, which was with Philly last year. And the yards per gain, you're looking at like a 3.9 yard average. Compare that to 2 years ago in 2022 when it was 5.5. Like, 3.9 yards a carry, you know, it's just, you saw a lot of times where you would try to, you know, you would try to basically have him explode between the tackles, but guess what? If you're not out-muscling them in the hole, you're not going to be able to explode. Wow, that sounded dirty. Wow. Good God, that's... But you get what I'm saying, right?
Yes.
Like, you can't... On fourth and one, and you're trying to power forward. You know what play I'm talking about, right?
Yes.
I mean, it was on both ends. Like, one, I don't want DeAndre Swift running up the gut between the tackles on that particular play. Granted, the offensive line was getting pushed back. They were getting completely out-muscled, so they didn't exactly create a hole for him. But, you know, it goes to show, like, Derrick Henry could find a way to power through that wall, even if he was getting pushed back. Saquon Barkley could, maybe even an in-prime Jordan Howard, but DeAndre Swift is not that guy.
He is not that guy. And this team, it's like the front office and the coaching staff were not on the same page when it was created. And that's bad. That's bad. You've got to have alignment.
You don't have alignment right now in leadership, because you hired Ryan Poles. Ryan Poles all does this stuff Now here's Kevin Warren, and now it feels like he's more in charge than Ryan Poles. What was the game we played the other week, Sean? Who's in charge?
Yeah, and you know, if you listen to different insiders, nobody seems to know exactly what's happening inside that building because
No.
It's mayhem. And I mean, you listen to the things that were publicly said. George said that they learned from their mistakes, and you're not going to have the GM reporting to, you know, Ted Phillips. He's like, the new GM is going to be in charge of all football decisions, and he's going to report directly to me. And you're okay. You've got that. And then suddenly Kevin Warren is hired. And you're like, okay, well, then what's the structure? As soon as he was hired, we're like, what is the structure? And they basically took they put a middleman in between them.
Yeah, you know what makes a dysfunctional franchise worse? An unclear chain of command. And this is another point I wanted to get to because I want to genuinely ask this question. For all the shit that you and I give Georgie Porgy, I would love to sit in a room and ask him how he feels on every single aspect of this franchise. Because I generally want to know, are there times he goes to the board with something sensical, but his 102-year-old mother, his siblings, and 87-year-old Pat Ryan have something else to say? I don't know. Nobody knows. And that is just a structure. It's a structural issue, I should say. Because, I need to go to the board. The Bears are in the hands of the old-ass McCaskies, old-ass Pat Ryan, and your president, who's supposed to be running the show, is on the board of directors listening to George McCaskey and the McCaskies. So tell me this. Maybe, sure, you could say George McCaskey wants to win. I think Kevin Warren really wants to win. What does it matter to Pat Ryan? What does it matter to him? What is freaking Virginia McCaskey gonna say at this point? What emotional investment do the other McCaskies have who are barely seen or involved?
It is like a whole room of. Have you ever seen the original Texas Chainsaw Massacre?
A long time ago, yes.
Where it's just like the grandpa that looks like a corpse, and then they're like trying to give him the hammer to hit the lady. They're like, hit him, grandpa, get her, grandpa. And like, I feel like that whole room of those people are the board of directors. It's you've got 102-year-old Crypt Keeper Virginia.
You shall not pass.
Nas Virgatu. She. And then you've got Georgie Porgy Puddin' Pie. And then you've got his ding dong family, and then you've got old George Ryan, and then Kevin Warren, that's his boss. What are you gonna do? Vote against your boss? It is just a dysfunction. There is no like accountability there. And you've got Ding Dong George, who has no business running an NFL team, none whatsoever. They were successful financially because Sweaty Teddy was a good businessman. And it's the NFL, and it's really hard to lose money in the NFL. But you were terrible on the field because you can't get out of the way. And I know DeBears blog is, you know, used to have insiders in the clubhouse, which I swear it must have been Sweaty Teddy. But he swears up and down that, you know, George is trying to win. No, George is a tinkerer. George is like, I'm letting the people that know football make the football decisions, but they have to bring everything to George for him to bless. Oh, we want to trade up to get Mitch Trubisky. Got to get George's blessing. And why do you have to get George's blessing? He doesn't say no to anything. He just got to be involved. Stay out of the way. Stay out of the way. Count your purple crayons.
Hey, George, we want to replace all the water cannons that we use to hydrate our players with RC Cola. Oh, okay.
Can we get a good deal on RC Cola? Let me make a call. I got a guy.
Because they have RC Cola in the stands, there's just a big old lawn hose hooked up to one of the dispensers. It just runs all the way down to the sidelines. People are tripping over it.
It's hooked up to like a 55-gallon drum of RC Cola, and there's no pressurized in it. So George has to run over there and shake the can to get it to fizz and spray.
You know, there have been,
I'm
I mean,
helping.
look at me. I'm keeping my team hydrated.
My mom said I'm a big boy. Right,
I
Mom? Ooh.
was hearing there were conversations going on from a bunch of people, you know, around just wondering what's going on with the Bears and talking about the structure and everything. And I think it was WGN radio I turned on when I was coming home, and people were like, could George do the self-respecting thing and just step down from his post?
He won't.
Like, he won't, but that's the thing. But then who becomes the next chairman? I mean, really, I'm not saying Kevin Warren is the right guy to be running this, but wouldn't you rather just be like, hey, Kevin Warren is going to be the leader of this franchise, and the McCaskies are just going to own the team.
I
That
have
sounds like a better scenario than what you have now, even if it might not be perfect.
A question though, is what makes Kevin Warren qualified to hire the right football people?
That's the thing, though. That's the thing. I can't say that he is.
Is he ran the Big Ten and did a great job there. Okay, like no doubt about it. The Big Ten grew significantly under his leadership. He built a beautiful stadium in Minneapolis. Okay, give him that. I think he has a passion to win. I think he actually
He
wants to
cares.
win. I
He
think he
wants to.
cares. I think he cares. I don't know if he has the ability to correctly identify people. I do think that he's not going to be a wilt over like George, and I don't, but if the reports, some of the reports are true, is he was against Jim Harbaugh because of beef they had in the Big Ten. And I'm not saying that Jim Harbaugh was the answer, because Jim Harbaugh would have brought this back to 1952 and we'd be running the I and
But he gets results.
he keeps you in games and he is a disciplined coach. And he hires competent coordinators. It's just going to be, it's not going to be modern football. And, but he's, you're not going to get blown out. He's keeping you in games and you're going to build from the trenches.
It's more the principle of the matter over anything. I mean, let's be real here. It's the idea of going above and beyond and hire a guy you might not be, quote, comfortable with. And that is the one of the ultimate problems with this whole operation is we've talked about it many times. You know, they don't want to hire a disruptor. They don't want to hire someone that's going to, not be perfect to take Virginia McCaskey to Sunday Mass. It's that whole type of thinking. And like you said, I don't know if Kevin Warren is truly fully qualified to hire a football coach. But you know what? I do think that you would at least look more appealing to a guy like Ben Johnson if you had this structure of command where you said, hey, I'm in charge. I'm doing the hires. We're going to pay you what you want. And you're gonna sell a vision to him. That sounds better than how they've gone about this process so many times. And look, I think you and I can both agree, even if it's not what we want, that Ryan Poles is still gonna be the GM, right? They're not
Yes.
gonna fire him.
I don't think so.
So, what's that structure gonna look like? Because they don't want to make that clear. Remember Kevin Warren during that press conference? We didn't get a clear answer.
No.
That's where we asked, who's in charge? If we knew who was in charge and it was the logical football man making the decision, regardless of whether we thought it was right or not, he would have come right out and said, that's Ryan Poles. That's the GM. He's making the hire. Not George, not Ernie Accorsi, not Bill Polian. I can't believe we go through this every 3 years.
It's just, on the one hand, I'm going to backtrack on that. I want Ryan Poles gone. If he's staying, at least the nice thing is I don't have to watch stupid George do press conferences and talk about his candidates and watch him hire the dippest of shits. And at least you're like, all right, we already got this dipshit. And
the dippest of shits. That's great. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah. So you're going to go through and you're going to hire your head coach. And I think it's less of a circus if you don't get rid of Ryan Poles, but I think just Ryan Poles has got to go. And then we're gonna have to go through this whole circus again. And I think you're more likely to get Ben Johnson if you don't have Ryan Poles as your GM. We listen to him and everything. Ben Johnson doesn't say a lot, but when he says things, they mean things. He wants to be aligned with the GM, not just in contract. I mean, sure. Yeah. You want to make sure that they're secure, but he wants to be aligned with him in philosophy and in what type of players that they're going to go for. And, you know, the coach, you know, you can't have the GM on an island and just be like, here's your roster, do something with it. Is you've got to listen to your coaching staff going, hey, I don't have a center. I really need a center. And then you work with them. They should be a part of that conversation and be like, yeah, we need, like, I don't want to give the head coach the ultimate, you know, power of roster decisions or, you know, the roster build, because that never turns out well. It always is. It's too much. You need a GM, but they, head coach should have influence and say, like, yeah, you know what? I need to run my system. I really need this type of center. And you're like, okay, well, let's go through the tape of who there's available. And then it's my job to figure out how to get them. Like, that's how that should work. Not, oh, I love Ryan Bates. Let me go get him. Now you got to figure out how to make him work. Keep him healthy. Like, it's just dumb shittery. It's Ben Johnson wants a GM that is aligned with him and he feels he can work with, not that they're aligned in their contracts. Like, who cares if, you know what, Ryan Poles only has 3 years left of his contract and you gave Ben Johnson a 4-year deal. Like, that, who cares about that? Is you want to make sure it's somebody you can work with, somebody that you're aligned philosophically with, and you feel like that they're going to listen to what you have to say and you can build a working relationship. That's what's important. It's, they don't think they understand that. They just, well, we've got to line the contracts and make them the same time. Like, who gives a shit? So you already got him coming in with a GM that's on a seat that's just absolutely engulfed in flames. You've got a ding dong owner that Ben Johnson wants him to admit what faults he has. And when has George ever admitted fault?
Oh, well, you know, you shouldn't take anything Olin Krutz says seriously. Take it with a grain of salt.
Why? Like, Olin Krutz is a bully and kind of a jerk, but I believe what he's saying.
He knows, like, Olin Krutz knows football. Like, if he know, and listen, I think that his input would be much more valuable than Georgie Porgy's circle of retired friends.
Yeah.
Like,
Georgie,
honestly.
George, like, the only thing separating George and his buddies from the random people you walk into on a weekday at Dunkin' Donuts sitting in the corner holding court is George and his friends were born on third base. They're rich. That's it. It's the only difference is George, if George wasn't born rich, he would be that guy calling in the score talking about Mitch Trubisky.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, Mitch, that Mitch Trubisky, I don't even think he likes purple.
He doesn't like purple or crayons.
That Trubisky's a bum.
Yeah, and so riddle me this. Do you think the Bears would be reluctant to fire Ryan Poles because they want to try to make a pitch to Ben Johnson, where they don't want to look like they're trying to scramble? Like, do you think there's any way possible they're thinking that way?
Honestly, I don't know what the hell they think. It's everything that you would think a normal person would think. It's like it doesn't make sense. It's like if you're ever on a city bus and there's just that guy ranting and talking to himself, like how the hell are you going to guess what that guy's going to say next? And that's pretty much like listening to George. Like, what is George thinking? I don't know. He's a rambling lunatic. And I don't and As much as he doesn't admit it, George has his finger on the pulse. He knows what people think. He goes and talks to them. He reads the letters. Like
He does. He does.
he knows what people think. And I don't think he cares. He does what he thinks he's gonna, he thinks he knows better. And it's not until the media laughs at him and he's a joke that he takes, like he didn't wasn't willing to fire Matt Eberflus until he became a joke.
Well, I mean, if he didn't fire Matt Eberflus, he would have had a frickin' mutiny on his hands. Like, a literal mutiny. And even still, Ryan Poles and Kevin Warren had to go in and convince him. Convince him to the point where they had to wait until the next day after he did his initial press conference. That Eberflus, that next morning.
Yeah, it's like he had to wait until he heard everybody make fun of him, make fun of his team and the dipshit ownership. And he probably still went to church and had to pray about it
And talk to his mother.
and talked to his mother. And it's they're paralyzed with fear of having to make another best decision. They're going to live with, mark my words, they're going to live with Ryan Poles, not because they think he's good, but because they think they'll do a worse job if they have to decide again.
Yeah.
And that's sad. That's sad is that you are so not confident in your ability to hire somebody that makes sense, is that you will keep somebody that doesn't belong there because you are dreading making a decision again.
Yeah, I. The fact that we sit here with so little trust in this whole process is so telling, because we've been through this over and over. But one of the big differences now compared to before is you never had a quarterback with this ceiling before. Never. Ever. It
And here's
wasn't
the
Justin Fields. It wasn't Trubisky. It wasn't Rex Grossman. It wasn't Jay Cutler. Never had a quarterback with this ceiling. And you cannot afford to even come in second in this decision.
Yeah, it's here's the thing is you have a situation where you can get a good GM and a good head coach. They want to come here. If you're a GM, you've already got a young quarterback that's solved for. Like most GMs have to go into a situation to get that first GM job. You have to go into a situation where you're like, man, this is a disaster. We've got no cap room. We got no talent. We don't have a quarterback. Those are the situations that you're going into. This Bears one, it's like, you know what? We've got a lot of good players. We're just, the trenches are bad. And the trenches, you have no, the thing is, I don't think the Bears have a bad roster. They just have, they're so thin on the defensive line and they have a bad offensive line.
And you don't have the right coaching.
And you don't have the right coaching, but the any when you don't have talent in the trenches and depth in the trenches, every mistake is amplified. It's hard to overcome those. It's, you know what? If you've got your nickel back that's hurt, or you know, you have a bad nickel back, you can mask that. You can find ways to work around that. You cannot work around bad offensive line with injuries and defensive line that's riddled with injuries that was very thin to begin with. Like you just can't work around those. So the but the, you've got talent at in the defense. You've got a double digit sack edge rusher. You've got a you know a you've got a couple of good guys in the middle. You've got linebackers. You've got cornerbacks, you've got safeties, like you've got that. You've got wide receivers, you've got a tight end, you've got your quarterback, you've got a decent running back. Like it's just you don't have the trenches. But you have 80 some million dollars, a top 10 pick, two top 10 picks in the second round, 80 some million dollars, the ability to hire your own coach, living in a world-class city where you only have to fix the depth that the trenches, like that's a job as a GM and as a head coach. You come in here and you're like, man, I've got some talent here. I've got a quarterback. I can win. I can win here. And you know, if you win in Chicago, you are a hero forever. So
Yeah.
there are people like, I believe Ben Johnson wanted that job if it would have opened up last year. I believe he'll want it even more this year. It's you just, he's got to have everything that he wants lined up. I
So
don't think
don't
Mike,
give him what he
give
wants.
him what he wants. And, you know, I don't think Mike Vrabel will be the option because I think he scares George. And the one thing I will say about Kevin Warren is I think Kevin Warren is much more likely to hire a Mike Vrabel because I don't think he's scared of Mike Vrabel.
I don't think so either, but again, who's at the very top?
Georgie Porgie. Well,
It's the McCaskies.
McCaskey's, absolutely.
It's the McCaskies, and they have to, that family has to sit down and have a come to Jesus moment and say, listen, we have to let our guys pick the guy no matter what we think.
And
If we have to pay Ultra for Ben Johnson, and he wants as much rain as possible to do what he does, then damn it, let him do it. Stay in your frickin' box every game, color with your purple crayons, and eat your frickin' fancy ass food up there. Just stay away.
like I could talk myself into Mike Vrabel. But I
I
don't want
don't
him.
want Mike
I
Vrabel.
don't either. I don't either. But it's like if you really want something on Christmas and but you know you're gonna get socks and underwear, and you're like, I know I need socks and underwear, but I don't want socks and underwear. I want this cool thing. Like, but you can you're like, but I need socks and underwear at some point. It's kind of like that. It's Mike Vrabel is not going to be like a bad decision, I don't think. But Ben Johnson is the guy I want. I think he is the one that's going to do good things. He's the one that's going to unlock everything with Caleb Williams. And you don't have to worry about your offensive coordinator leaving because he is your de facto offensive coordinator. He's his playbook. You don't have to. Who cares if somebody leaves? You know, like Matt Nagy left Andy Reid. Did Andy Reid sweat that at all? No, because he's Andy Reid.
Right.
Like that's, Like, I think if some for some miracle, Mike Shanahan gets fired, Mike Shanahan would be my move to my number one, because I think you would see the Andy Reid arc with Mike Shanahan, where he got really close to the top of the hill, and there was issues why he couldn't, and he goes to a new team and refreshed, re-energized with a better quarterback situation, and suddenly, he becomes a juggernaut. Andy Reid had a good quarterback in Philadelphia with Donovan McNabb, but Donovan McNabb is not elite. And
No. He
you,
thinks he was,
the
but
same thing. Yeah. And, Shanahan is, he's got a quarterback that is okay and he can do some good things, but he's not elite. And I think Caleb can be elite. And, so you come here and you could have that Andy Reid story arc. But I don't think Shanahan's going to get fired. I think they realize there how bad things can get if you try to replace somebody that's really good.
Yeah. God, this is all so exhausting. It's you have to, everything just sinks in so deep. You have to scrub all the poison and toxicity out of everything. It's like you have to go in and put up the big white and red tents like you're doing an extermination over Hallis Hall. Like it just It feels like no matter what happens, that McCaskey stink and that McCaskey just that occupation that they have, it's just until it's gone, it's never going to truly be gone. Even if they change their ways and they do what we want, it's still just going to linger over. It's just a gross feeling. And even if the McCaskeys truly are nice people and want the best, the fact of the matter is, you are not good at running and owning a football team, and you haven't been in decades.
No, George is terrible. We thought his brother was bad. George stepped in and was like, "Hold my purple drink."
Hey, his brother got us to a Super Bowl, man.
Yeah, George is just bad. George is bad.
Might be a nice guy, might be good with the fans, but he is terrible. As an owner, just incredibly terrible as an owner. Can we talk
Should
about
we
some
talk a little
positive
Cubs here?
stuff now?
Sure. What's positive?
So, the Cubs made a big boy move last week.
Yes, they made a very big boy move. So they traded Houston to get Tucker, who is arguably a top five hitter in the game. Fair.
Yes.
I am. They gave up some big compensation for that trade. I am okay with that level of trade if they re-sign him.
I like the trade. You know what? I like the trade because guess what? Regardless of what happens in the future, you got an elite hitter on your team for next year. That's the ultimate focus right now, is 2025. You didn't give up Matt Shaw. You didn't give up Owen Casey. You didn't
No.
give up any big name on your roster like Seiya Suzuki or who else was rumored. I mean, Seiya Suzuki was kind of one of the big ones because of some of the rumors, but you didn't give up any of those guys.
It's Hayden Wesneski. I don't think he was ever going to be super important to the
It's
Cubs.
replaceable. That's a
He's
replaceable level pitcher right there.
Isaac Paredes. Just, I mean, he was here for a cup of coffee, and I don't care.
And it
Cam
opens
Smith.
up Matt Shaw.
Cam Smith might end up being that one we regret. But Kyle Tucker being here is a good thing. And I just, but I'm going to be annoyed if they let him walk in free agency.
Yes, and guess what? Kyle Tucker is going to make a lot of money. If he keeps doing what he's doing,
yes.
He is going to make an insane amount of money.
Yeah, he's going to get Juan Soto money.
That's the market now. And the
you,
craziest thing
that's
about
the cost
this...
of, that's the cost of being in the game.
Yes, yes. And guess what? Now that the cost is what it is, it makes frickin' Bryce Harper look like a bargain. Isn't that crazy?
Well, that's the thing is when you sign those big deals is at some point down the road, it looks like a bargain. And even when it's the end, you know, with Bryce Harper, like, oh, he's going to be 38 years old, making $30 million. Who cares now? Like $30 million isn't, that's a drop in the bucket. And it's going to get even better, you know, in a few years. Like the market's going to keep going crazy. So go ahead. Like, I know Jed is scared to death of long-term contracts, but when you sign a giant, like a guy that's awesome, you sign him to those long-term deals because they earn that money. And at some point, the way the market changes, it becomes, first it becomes super tolerable, then it becomes a bargain. That's how it works.
Right. Right.
So I'm all 100% for signing that dude to a long-term contract for big dollars. Put your big boy pants on, Jed, and sign him to a big contract extension. I'm fine if he does it now.
Oh yeah, it's not going to happen now, but
no, but I would be super open to it.
Oh God, yeah, me too. I would love it. He's going to test free agency. His agent is going to have, unless something unforeseen happens, he's going to test free agency, which is expected. But again, I want to worry about that when the time comes. I want to enjoy the fact that the Cubs have that star hitter that they've been longing for, and a star in this city that didn't require years of tanking to get.
Right.
So, you get him. He's your right fielder. He's the alpha in your lineup. He is the guy that is going to be the center of this team. You were looking for an alpha. You got an alpha. He brings this combination of power, average, on-base, production, and he doesn't strike out a lot. He gets 30-some home runs, and he does not strike out a lot. That's how good he is.
So his steamer projections for this coming year are 33 home runs, 275 batting average, 365 on base, 509 slugging, 874 OPS with 104 strikeouts and 82 walks.
So, in other words, more productive than what we've gotten in the past few years.
Yes.
And listen, I like the idea of that you have that really good power bat now, that great power bat that can produce on all levels. And then you have guys like Seiya and Ian Happ around him that that helps bring out their value more. I still think that you're going to need a lot of things to go right still with this lineup as it's constructed. Guess what? You're going to need PCA to take another step forward. You're going to need a healthy Dansby Swanson. You're going to need Seiya to do what he did last year and maybe a little more in the power department. You're also going to want Michael Bush to do as good or better than last year. You're going to want to make sure that Miguel Amaya, if he's going to be your primary catcher, he's going to be closer to the offensive guy he was in the second half of last year compared to the first. There's a lot that needs to go right here. So at least now you have a guy you can rely on to play at top value. Like, that's fair, right?
Yes. So I'm gonna th So right now your roster is probably, if the season were to start today, Happ in left, PCA in center, Tucker in right, Saya as your DH, Michael Bush at first, Nico at second, Dansby at short, Matt Shaw at third, and Miguel Amaya and Carson Kelly catching.
Yes, and I do think one of the big moves the Cubs are going to make, not maybe big in terms of the name, but one of the notable moves they're going to make, they are going to bring some insurance at third base because right now we see Matt Shaw as the likely third baseman, but guess what? He's still a prospect and the Cubs are still going to try to make him earn it. So you're going to need to have some backup or insurance at that spot.
And it won't be Patrick Wisdom.
No, it won't be Patrick Wisdom.
If
It
he
won't
signed
be,
overseas.
yes, it won't be Patrick Wisdom. It won't be Nick Madrigal. It won't be Miles Mastroboni. It won't be Isaac Paredes. So that's where you got to figure it out.
So right now, you're like, okay, I would love to have another power bat in this lineup. Where do you put him?
Well, you hope that whoever's at third base is going to be that, because guess what? You need power production from your third baseman. You just that's a cold hard fact, right?
I'm going to throw something out there and you may hate it.
Okay.
You may hate it and you can throw it right back.
Okay.
What would you say about moving Bush to second and bringing in Pete Alonso to play first?
You know what? I wouldn't, I can't say that I hate the idea, 'cause if you're adding Pete Alonso, you're adding 35, 40 home runs.
At Wrigley Field, it might be more. You might be 40, 45.
Depending on the year, is it going to be a wind blow in year or is it going to be a wind blow out year? Because if it's a wind blow out year, well, guess what? Some of those balls are going to be going over the scoreboard.
I mean, as long if you get a hot summer, the or early summer, boy, he's gonna pound some home runs.
But
I
even
my.
so.
My only concern with this lineup as is there is not a lot of flexibility. Is you look in the past, Chris Bryant could play the corner outfield spots. He could play DH, he could play third, he could play first in a pinch. You can move him around. You had until a couple of hours ago, you had Bellinger, who could play all three outfield spots, first base, and DH. And you gave you some flexibility on how you move things around. And now you don't. Like, I guess Ian Happ can play all three outfield spots.
Yeah, but he's in left. That is as solidified as it gets.
Right. But I'm just saying, it's like, but like, all right, like, let's say Pete Armstrong pulls a hammy. He's out for 2 weeks. Like, Ian Happ's probably your center fielder. Or I
Or you
don't.
bring up Owen Casey.
Maybe. But like, you just don't have a lot of flexibility in on how you do things. And
As of right now, no, but that's where going to be some of the moves are going to come in.
the thing is back when I was a kid, like, he didn't really have flexibility. He's a guy played a position, and that's what he
Right.
played. And you won World Series, and you did good. And the flexibility is kind of a more modern thing, but I see the benefit of it is Joe Maddon opened my eyes to the flexibility. I think he got a little silly with it at times, but I think the flexibility, positional flexibility, is super helpful in a long season like Major League Baseball has.
Yeah, and Joe Maddon was
And you
kind of
don't
one of the
have a lot.
pioneers of that.
Yeah, like I know some people like, oh, I'll put Bush at third, and I don't want to put Bush
No.
at third. I can live with him at second. I do not want him at third. He's a very good first baseman.
Yes, he is. Yes, he is.
And the reason I even brought that up is one is Pete Alonso is potentially, or I mean, he's on the market. You could bring him in, and that is just a power bat. And if you have Seiya Suzuki, Michael Busch, Kyle Tucker, Pete Alonso, Ian Happ, that's a pretty formidable middle of your lineup.
It is. It is. And, you know, one of the big X factors here is going to be how good some of these young guys are, particularly Pete Crow Armstrong and Michael Bush. And, you know, like I said earlier, that's going to be a big factor. But at least if you get the veterans the back of their baseball cards, you get Ian Happ the back of his baseball card, you get Dansby Swanson the back of his baseball card, Kyle Tucker the back of his baseball card. Then you say, okay, you at least know right there you'll get production from that.
My goal, like what I hope, is that PCA can be the leadoff hitter.
Yeah, and then just create absolute havoc on the base
Yes,
paths.
because that if he can be the guy at the end of the year, I think you can make him your leadoff hitter. He gets on base and just creates havoc, and that allows you to move Ian Happ up or down the lineup, because I think you could put him in different spots and protect people, or maybe he bats second, and where you could put him at the back of the lineup. You can he does hit, still have a little bit of pop in the bat, not as much as he used to, but you can move him around the lineup. And that just puts it takes away any necessity of Matt Shaw having to hit. If PCA comes out and takes a step backwards, then suddenly you've got two really young players that you have to protect in your lineup, in PCA and Matt Shaw and Miguel Amaya, who you don't know. You don't have the consistency enough to trust what you're going to get from him. And you don't want a situation where in your lineup you got three easy outs.
Right,
It
right.
no matter how good the top of the order is, it's setting you up bad.
Yeah, for sure.
So, I'm hearing people online being like, Alex Bregman is available.
He's gonna get a lot of money.
And he's going to get a lot of money, and he's the wrong side of 30.
Yep.
And I don't think he has, I mean, he's got some good power, but I don't want to bring him in, and unless hypothetically you use Nico Hoerner as a trade chip and you
Right.
move Matt Shaw second.
Yeah.
I don't want to block Matt Shaw.
I don't either, and I don't think the Cubs do either. Which is why I think if you're going to get insurance at third, you're looking more in the form of a Alec Bohm trade, or like a Justin Turner, or I wrote about him the other day. It's not the most exciting, but a guy like Paul DeYoung, something along those lines. But you're not going to sign a massive deal, I don't think, for Alex Bregman. I just don't see it.
Yeah, I don't see it either. Plus, it's not the type of move that Jed does.
No. So I feel like there's an elephant in the room from today that we got to address that we alluded to
What could
earlier.
that possibly be?
So the Cubs have indeed traded Cody Bellinger to the Yankees, and this was a move that we all saw coming. This has been in the works for a while. There was a bit of a stalemate between the two teams, in terms of eating salary, but they finally got it done. And I know there's a lot of people upset right now, and in a vacuum, I don't want to get rid of a guy like Cody Bellinger. I like Cody Bellinger. He's a good ball player. He's valuable. I'd like to have him on my team. And yes, the ultimate goal of the trade itself was to clear his cap off, you know, his salary. I don't even like calling it cap. There's no cap in baseball. But, you know, the salary was going to be cleared. That was the goal of the trade. But this wasn't, to me, a move that goes out and says, oh, we just don't want to pay the money. That's what Yu Darvish was. Yu Darvish was, we need to get his salary off the books because we can't / don't want to pay it. This is a situation where you have a logjam on your roster and you want to use that money to invest it in other areas. Now, could one say, well, they're the Cubs, go into the luxury tax, pay all that, and keep Cody Bellinger? In theory, yes, but what that doesn't solve is the logjam that you do have. Now, getting rid of Cody Bellinger in favor of keeping, say, Michael Busch at first, maybe it doesn't end up being the right decision. But if the decision is, hey, Busch is our first baseman, Suzuki's our DH/right fielder, Kyle Tucker is our right fielder / DH, PCA is our center fielder, where is he going to play? Where's Bellinger going to play? He's not going to be a platoon utility bench guy for $27 million. Right?
I just don't love the return. Like, I understood because you were going to either trade Bellinger or Suzuki. And if healthy, I like Suzuki's bat better. I do like that Bellinger is a better defender and has more flexibility as positionally and is a lefty, but Suzuki is a better hitter. And if you're going to make him DH anyway, like, then yeah, I like Suzuki better as a DH.
I agree.
But you got, what you got was cap relief and right-handed swingman Cody Poteet.
Yeah, which it...
it would have been nice to get a prospect, but Cody Poteet, I mean, I guess you do need bullpen because your bullpen was a disaster last year. He's a swingman. He has made some starts, but looking at the style of pitcher he has, man, that is like up Jed's alley. I think Jed really thinks he can make that guy a legitimate starting option in the case of an injury.
And maybe he can. I don't know. I mean, I just know that at the end of the day, the return was that relief with the salary. And the fact that the Cubs are eating less money than we thought they would, I think is a clear indicator of how that trade went down, because maybe they could have gotten more in return in terms of assets, but they would have to eat more money. And I don't think that was the goal for this trade. They needed to open up an efficient amount of space so they can supplement Bellinger's salary with other avenues and various. The Cubs are far from done right now, and they are churning this roster. This is what this trade is about. And that's my whole point. It's not about, hey, we want to get rid of this money because we don't want to spend it. They're going to spend it elsewhere. Will it be wise? Will it work? I don't know. Maybe it won't. But that's a baseball issue, not just a being cheap issue.
They better be spending the money.
They will be. They will.
That's all I'm saying is,
it depends on how well they spend it, but they will spend it.
So they're going to have to still rebuild that bullpen. Who's going to be the closer?
Right now, they don't really have one.
No, and you cannot go into another season without a closer. I know it's kind of become like, well, it's your high leverage guys and your low leverage guys. No, I want a closer. We saw what a disaster it was last year not having one. We need a closer.
You need to have a legitimate competition for one, too. You can have multiple candidates to be a closer, but you need to get that figured out, like you really do.
Yeah, you've got to figure that out. And closers don't grow on trees.
No, they don't.
But, you know, and one X factor here that could change the calculus of everything Jed is trying to do is if somehow we get Roki Sasaki.
I don't think they're going to get him. I think it's more likely going to be Jesus Luzardo from the Marlins.
Probably. And I don't hate it, but I don't love it.
It's riskier, but it could pay off well, but it's definitely riskier.
But man, I really want Sasaki.
Oh, me too. Me too.
Yeah, I just really do. And I mean, it's such a wild card, and I've heard a report that he wants to be like the international face of a team. So it doesn't sound like it'll be the Dodgers.
I see the Padres being a very strong contender.
I'm hearing people say that the White Sox could be strong contenders.
Well,
I
isn't
don't
that
see.
just after Chris Getz said we're going to make a presentation to him and there was a link to Iguchi from the World Series team or something?
Like I have no idea what his attraction to the White Sox would be. Like they're
Campfire
not gonna
milkshake.
fair enough. But I know financially the contract's gonna be what it's gonna be. It's not gonna be this, it's got a cap to it.
It's an
But
amateur free agent
yeah.
contract. It's not like signing Yamamoto out of
Yeah.
Japan.
But so why wouldn't you pick somewhere that has the possibility of winning?
Well, how many of them have campfire milkshakes?
That's fair. I mean, who knows? The Cubs may steal that. They sent some people down there to see what's scouting.
You know what I picture? Do you remember that famous, was it a Burger King commercial where they snuck into the McDonald's headquarters and stole like the McMuffin recipe or something? Do you remember that commercial?
I don't.
It's in a dark cabinet and like the Burger King is going through the files and he picks out the file with the McMuffin sandwich, or McMuffin, what was it called? It was, the English muffin that had the sausage and the cheese that like that breakfast sandwich, egg cheese biscuit, whatever it
The
is.
McMuffin?
It was the McMuffin, right? So
Yeah.
like Burger King did a spin-off of the McMuffin and they made a commercial of the Burger King like sneaking in like a secret agent going to the files and taking the recipe out. That's kind of what I picture. There's Jed Hoyer dressed like the Hamburglar going to Guaranteed Rate Field and plucking the campfire milkshake recipe out.
Man, I don't love the Lizardo possibility.
Yeah, I don't hate it, but I am a little iffy on it. So, yeah, I don't know.
You know what's funny is I've heard a lot of people complain that there's too many lefties in the lineup. Like, who's ever complained about too many left-handed pitchers in your starting rotation?
Well, and the one thing I'll say this too is consider who like the top hitters in the National League are these days. Shohei Ohtani, lefty. Freddie Freeman, lefty. Juan Soto, lefty. Matt Olson, lefty. Christian Yelich, lefty. Just saying.
Yeah. I'm still not bothered by it. Yeah, so the Cubs still have a lot of work to do, and I think they're going to try to exhaust the trade market before they really jump into free agency. But I'm just I'm curious of how this whole thing is going to play out by the time it's spring training's here.
Well, and you know, we'll say this, as frustrating as it's been being a Cubs fan the past few years, is they have kind of lived up to their words so far. We knew they weren't going to be in on Juan Soto. It was frustrating, but we knew it. And they were rumored to be heavy in the trade market, and they were going to be very active. They were going to shake things up. And so far, that's come to fruition. So I
Yes.
believe there is plenty more to come. Whether they're exciting moves, okay moves, questionable moves, a combination of all of them, we're going to see stuff happen. It's going to be a very active offseason. I mean, heck, even during the winter meetings, Craig Counsell flat out said this is going to be a different looking roster come spring training.
Yeah. They last year they left. I mean, they went into spring training with a lot of question marks, and we called them out on it, and those question marks turned into gaping holes, and they screwed their season before the season really even started. What you're saying is
Right.
you don't win the division in April, but you lose the division in April, and they
I
left.
believe Steve Stone said that, yes.
And but I'm going to attribute it to you. Because I heard it from you, so I'm gonna do it like Michael Scott. It's you don't win divisions in April, you lose divisions in April. Steve Stone, and then underneath it, Alex Pat.
Right on. Put it on a whiteboard.
Yeah, but last year they lost the division in April.
Yeah,
They
they did.
lost that early. It was with just disastrous bullpen play. And you were like, and then just every way they could collapse, it was embarrassing. And suddenly, no matter what happened by the end, you were just so far out of things that, it would have taken a miracle. And you got to start better. Got to come out of the gates hot. And that way you've got flexibility and cushion for inevitably having a lineup with several young players you're going to hit. Holes, you're gonna hit issues, and you're gonna get injuries, and you build that early cushion, and got to jump out of the gate early.
Yeah, exactly. Because you dug the hole the last 2 seasons. It just so happened that 2 years ago, you dug yourself out and then you fell back in at the end. You can't rely on doing that again. Everybody knows that. And, I think one of the big things about the roster going forward, too, is, and I think they're finally learning from this, and I don't mean this to be offensive to these guys on a personal level, but no more of the Madrigals, the Master Bonies, the Wisdoms, the Bodies. Like, that stuff's got to be done with.
Yes. Like, I'm fine with any of those guys as like utility people, bench guys. But you need real players in there every day.
Right. And I mean, if you have, you need some of those guys as organizational depth where you say, you know what? We got some injuries. We need to call up Miles Mastroboni for 10 days to be our 26th man. Okay, every team has that. We know that. But you were watching way too many instances over the past 2 years where those at-bats mattered. That just can't happen.
I know that they've said that they're not done, and I expect more trades and building up that starting rotation. But I want to see bullpen. I want to see a closer. Is that was a huge hole last year, and I want to see fixes on it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Other side of town, we had a big trade.
Yes, we did. Yes, we did.
Gary and I had been discussing, what a trade would bring for Garrett Crochet, and I was like, Chris Getz. This is the time. Is he got big boy pants on or not? And he made a good trade.
Yeah, I mean, I think the trade is objectively good. You got several top prospects in return. You knew you weren't going to get the equivalent of the Chris Sale trade, but you still did pretty good. The one catcher that they got is really, really promising. They have a promising outfield prospect as well, who is a few years away, but you hear the talk from the GMs at the winter meetings, and it sounds like a lot of those professionals are very high on those guys. Now listen, a lot of my Sox fan friends kind of just shrug their shoulders because they're naturally tired of being sold on hope. Because you went through this once, it didn't work, and now once again, here you are selling off what good you do have from the worst team ever and buying lottery tickets. I understand the apathy and the frustration there. But from a pure baseball standpoint, I think the White Sox did well. I think the Red Sox did well. I thought this was a good trade all around.
I agree. It doesn't deplete the farm system of the Red Sox. They get front end starting pitcher. The White Sox are resetting because they're not going to be good for a while. And the one thing you could say is Garrett Crochet is a starting pitcher now. By the time, he's going to be due huge money by the time that, you're even ready to turn that corner. And is that juice going to be worth the squeeze? Like, is it worth having a really good pitcher on a really bad team? They're saying no. Plus, the White Sox just don't pay anybody. But this return is good. It's several years away. The catcher is a lefty catcher, which is you don't see those very often, but
No, you don't.
he's 22. The outfielder, he was from the 2024 draft. You got a 23-year-old infielder and a 22-year-old pitcher. And, they're high upside guys. It's just you're several years away from them being reasonable. And what I told Gary is, I was like, here's the thing is you've got to pack your farm system because they won't all make it.
Right.
Is bringing a prospect into the majors and having them be successful takes a lot of things. One, it's got to be a guy that has talent. And you need the coaching staff in the minors and the infrastructure in the minors to develop that. Because nobody that's in a draft just comes in as a superstar in baseball. It's you've got to see get them seasoning and work in there, some much more than others. So you need that infrastructure and that coaching in the minors. And so you've already identified the talent. Do you have the coaching and the infrastructure in your minor league system if you're the White Sox? I don't know. We're going to find out the answer to that.
And they have revamped it. And
Yeah,
you
yeah.
did hire Brian Bannister, who is very well regarded. So I do think there is hope that you have at least turned enough where you can say, okay, let's see what these guys can do. Do they have all the right resources? I don't know, but we have to see.
Yeah, you also need health. There's only so much you can do about that.
Though I do think the White Sox could do better with that department.
They could, just like the Cubs could. But health is largely out of people's hands. And then there's that last factor, luck. There's a whole lot of luck in bringing a baseball prospect in there. And you look at the Cubs. You're like, wow, the Cubs lucked out. And Addison Russell and Kyle Schwarber and
Chris Bryant, Javi
Chris Bryant, Javi
Baez.
Baez. And a few years later is only one of them is worth a salt. Addison Russell, I don't know where he's playing in. He's literally living the eastbound and down arc, story arc.
Yeah, I have no idea what happened to him, and whatever he's
He's a pile of garbage baseball player that's playing in the Mexican Baseball League. He is just a disaster. Chris Bryant is a shell of himself after those injuries, an absolute shell of himself.
So is Javi Baez.
Javi Baez is an even bigger shell of himself. Kyle Schwarber's the only one.
Yeah, and I'd say Wilson Contreras too. He's still doing pretty well.
Okay. But
Rizzo's old, you know.
it's but it's it took the Cubs lucked out in all of those guys coming up the same time and having, productivity early, and then it just sort of fell off.
Yeah. Right.
Because there very well could have been a scenario where right now Matt Shaw is being blocked at third base by Chris Bryant, who's still an all-star.
Sure.
That's a different timeline in the universe, but that could have happened. Dansby Swanson, maybe we didn't need to sign him because Javi Baez was playing as an all-star level. There's all these different scenarios, but there was a lot of luck involved, and that's why you have to have a lot of depth. For years, when the Tribune owned the Cubs, it's always that one prospect that everyone was riding on. Everybody else was tradable, but you had that one untouchable guy.
Corey Patterson, Corey Patterson, Corey Patterson.
Felix
Felix
P.A.
P.A. Ah, jinx. Those were the two that really stood out in my
Dwight
mind.
Smith, Jerome Walton.
Yeah, that was before my time. Wasn't Brooks Kieschnick big in the day?
Yes. And was wild as Jerome Walton and Dwight Smith came up the same year, were number one and number two in all rookie of the year voting, and just nothing after that.
Yeah, the 89 division team, right?
Yep. Somewhere I have a baseball autographed by Jerome Walton.
That's great.
There was a time when that was a prized possession. Like, people are like, oh my, you hang on to that. When he's in the Hall of Fame, that's gonna be worth something.
Right on. Yeah, that totally happened. One of my friends on Twitter, Brad Robinson, he actually made a really funny joke about the rumors about Kyle Tucker. And he was saying, and this is for ones who understand, they'll get the joke. He's like, I sure hope Kyle Tucker isn't our next Brian Roberts. How
Wow.
many years were the Cubs rumored to be in on that guy?
Yeah.
And then I remember a few years later, one year in particular, I think it was 2009, it was right before he went to the White Sox. There was so much talk about the Cubs going after Jake Peavy. And there was even talk about them going after like Adam Dunn too. And it just never happened.
So, the White Sox, they've peeled off most of their contracts. Who's the big one left? That's
It's
trade.
Robert, right? Luis Robert.
Yes. Do you think he gets moved?
I mean, the thing is, his value is so down from last year, and you're probably not going to get right now top value. What makes me wonder is, do the Sox hope he goes out and plays well this year and then gets traded at the deadline? Because I just don't think you're going to get the value that you want at this current moment.
It's one of those things, though, that's it's a complete risk because he could do worse. He could be hurt again, and then he's untradeable. So it's one of those things is as a GM, you've got to know your club better and your players better than everybody else knows your club and your players. But Benintendi is untradeable. That is an untradeable contract.
Yeah, no one's taken that.
So if you're able to move Luis Robert, you would have Andrew Benintendi with his $17.1 million. Then your next highest paid player that has a guaranteed money would be Austin Slater at $1.75 million. Everybody else will be in arbitration or pre-arbitration.
Yeah, because you'll have what? Andrew Vaughn, who's arbitration. Who the hell's even left on that roster these days?
Corey Lee is pre-arb. Lenin Sosa is pre-arb.
He's still a thing.
Oscar Colas is pre-arb.
Wasn't Oscar Colas supposed to be Cuban Otani a few years ago?
Yeah.
I also think they've kind of screwed him with his development, so, but, yeah, that's a whole other story.
Yeah, so your payroll could be, like, $48 million.
That doesn't even equate to the yearly salary of Juan Soto.
Oh, my God. Is the White Sox payroll could be, you know, not even in the top 10 of single player payrolls or salaries.
Yeah.
But I guarantee Benintendi would be gone if they could get somebody to just take that contract. They would just be like, we don't want anything. They would package somebody with him to move on that contract.
They'd hog tie him, put him in a barrel and ship him out.
They'd tie him up and put him on the back of Buttercup. Yeah, so I don't. The White Sox, man, that is. Are they going to make any moves in free agency?
Wasn't Austin Slater their move?
I think he was, but is that, are they doing anything else?
I'm sure they'll sign somebody.
Are you sure?
No.
Are you sure?
Well, hey, they just traded with the Cubs. That one catcher they got from the Angels for cash considerations.
Yeah, cash considerations. I'm waiting for that to pay off.
Hey, it's Reinsdorf's favorite thing to trade.
Cash considerations. Yeah, so the White Sox acquired Matt, I don't even know, is it Taste Thace?
Yeah.
For cash. So the White Sox had an opening on their 40-man roster, so there was no corresponding move. God.
Good job.
Like, I don't think it's possible to lose as many games as the White Sox lost last year, but they might be a worse team.
The one thing I'll say is they have arms in that organization, and you're going to see more of those arms next year. So,
yeah, but you know what happens with young arms is you've got to live through the ups and downs of those.
Of course, of course. You're right. It'll just be at least something to watch. Like, let's be real. What's more intriguing? Watching Michael Soroka, current form Michael Soroka, or potentially Noah Schultz or one of these pitching prospects that you have?
The whole spring training is going to be just basically the opening scene from Major League.
Who are these fucking guys?
Better
teach him some control before he kills somebody.
I might watch that movie tonight.
Wouldn't be a bad idea. I gotta watch. I'm off tomorrow, so I get to kind of relax, stay up, and do something. I'm gonna watch some Christmas movies. I'm thinking Home Alone.
What you should watch is Santa's Sleigh with Bill Goldberg.
Yeah, okay.
Have you ever seen that one before?
No, I don't think I have.
Oh my God, it's so bad. So Bill Goldberg is Santa Claus, but Santa Claus is a bad guy. He's a demon. And so it's basically Bill Goldberg beating the shit out of everybody and killing people.
Yeah, that's wonderful.
I did watch a really bad Christmas movie recently.
Which one?
Red One.
Oh, didn't that just come out?
Yeah, it's bad. It's already on streaming. It's bad.
Is it fun bad or just bad?
You know what? I think my daughter might like. I think it might. It's one of those ones. I don't think it was geared towards kids, but I think kids will be the only ones that will enjoy it because it's so ridiculous. But it's pretty ridiculous. But you know, my people, this is an unpopular opinion. My favorite Christmas movie, Gremlins.
What the fuck, man?
Yeah.
You might be like, could you imagine being in a circle of people? What's your favorite Christmas movie? I like Christmas Story. I like Christmas Vacation. I like It's a Wonderful Life. I like Home Alone. I like Gremlins.
It's funny in my house. They'll be like, "What's your favorite Christmas movie?" And my kid will say Elf, and my wife will say A Child's Christmas in Wales, and I say Gremlins. And I think my kid might be the only one that is right.
Yeah, Elf's great.
You know, I recently saw an interview with Will Ferrell. And he's talking about James Caan. And he's like, James Caan hated me. And he pulled me aside one day and he goes, "You're not funny." And he's like, "I think all those scenes where he just looked at me with disgust were just real."
Genuine, yep.
And he said, then when we went to the premiere of it, he saw it all together on the screen and not like living through it take after take. And he goes, "That was really funny."
I think, yeah, I did. I didn't watch the interview, but I read like a transcript of it. I think that's really interesting.
Because James Caan, I think, is a curmudgeon. Well, was a curmudgeon.
Hell of an actor, though.
True.
Hell of an actor.
Yeah. Elf is very good. I like Elf a
But he
lot.
was perfect for that movie. Like
Yeah.
for that role, he was perfect.
Yeah. Elf is very good. Christmas Story, obviously, very good.
I just watched the sequel that came out the other year. Have you seen the sequel?
Yeah. It took me a couple tries to finish it. It just didn't have, I it just didn't hit home with me.
It's not going to have the charm of the original, but I do appreciate the effort in making it like canonically a sequel. Because like there was an original Christmas Story too with like David Stern, like not David Stern, Daniel Stern, sorry. It was made in like 2012 and it's like the worst movie ever. It's just like it just complete nonsense. But like this was actually like a canonically like, hey, here is a timeline many years later.
Yes.
I can appreciate that and bringing back much of the original cast, but the other thing I did like about it too was the very ending when he's typing out the story and it goes from his voice to Gene Shepherd's showing the very beginning of Christmas Story. Like, I appreciated that.
Christmas Story 2 was terrible.
Yeah, just an abomination. It was like the third and fourth Home Alones, because Home Alones 1 and 2 are great, and then everything after that, just no.
Christmas Story is fantastic. I don't think my wife's ever seen more than just a couple of minutes of it.
I love Darren McGavin's character.
I love Darren McGavin, and he is awesome. Like, I don't know if you've ever seen him as Kolchak. It
Have
so
I?
Kolchak it. Was it was a made originally a made for TV movie in the 70s about a pool or a newspaper reporter, and there's like these mystery killings, and he solves it, and it turns out it's a vampire, and nobody ever believes him. And then they made a sequel to the movie that was a made for TV movie, and at the time they were like the two biggest made for TV movies ever. And they were going to make a third one, and they decided to make it into a series. And it's fantastic. Actually, it was basically the precursor to X-Files. Like,
Really?
yes, it is
How
fantastic.
interesting.
The first movie, the first made-for-TV movie, I Sven Gulli played it maybe 2 months ago, in October maybe. And it was just chef's kiss, so good. And then I started rewatching the series. It's on, I think, Peacock. It's so good. But, it's funny that that's how I knew him first. And so it was weird seeing him in Christmas Story. But then, when you forget all about, that as time goes on, because it was kind of a blip in the pop culture, and Christmas Story is so front and forward, and that you forget, and then you go back and watch Kolchak, and you're like, oh shit, it's Darren McGavin.
I recently watched Darren McGavin in an HBO TV movie on the Cold War, and he was basically the Soviet Union is taken over by these separatists or whatever, and they start launching nukes all over the world, and some of the nukes hit the United States. People think the president is dead; he's not. So Darren McGavin played like the Secretary of the Interior, who since they thought the president is dead, they made him the president, and Darren McGavin's character is very like corrupt and crazy, and he wants to go on this big bombing spree when everything was slowing down. It was James Earl Jones is in it too, so it's got a pretty solid cast. But yeah, I recently watched Darren McGavin in that. I'm like, wow, the old man Ralphie's dad is a corrupt president. That's pretty funny.
I'll have to check that one out.
Yeah, it's on YouTube.
So my daughter is currently dancing with the Joffrey Ballet in their Nutcracker, and my best friend showed up to performance 2 nights ago. Sun wait, yeah, Sunday night, and he was dressed as Clark Griswold from Christmas Vacation. Even had
Yes.
the squirrel mounted to his back.
Squirrel.
And I was like, you showed up to the ballet dressed as Clark Griswold.
Amazing.
I feel like he might be wearing that every day during the month of December.
Hey, you might as well go all out.
Christmas Vacation. I just like that in the 80s, they made a whole premise of a movie that essentially was, I can't believe you didn't give me a Christmas bonus. And then you fast forward to 2024, and people are like, you got a Christmas bonus?
Yeah, I didn't get a Christmas bonus.
None.
Bonus? How did you get a
None.
bonus?
So yeah, but back to the White Sox, they're a hot mess, and I don't see them making any big splashes.
No.
They are just gonna milk whatever profits Jerry can until he dies.
Their whole goal of this offseason, after having the worst season ever, was to cut payroll. They flat out told you.
Yes. And they're just like their payroll could be the lowest in baseball if they could get rid of their stupid outfielder.
What a way to address Luis Robert, their stupid outfielder. Hey, he had a bad year, but he's been an all-star and a home run derby
I wasn't
participant.
talking about that one. I
Oh, you were talking about Benintendi.
was talking about Andrew Benintendi.
Okay. I thought you were talking about Luis Robert.
No, Luis Robert at least can bring you something back. Some
Yeah.
somebody will take a flyer. But going full circle is, somebody that you can bring in that doesn't currently have a job that could be competition for Matt Shaw. Huh? Huh? Johan Moncada?
No. A lot of people are talking about that. I don't want that.
I don't either. I don't he's not gonna be on a I don't think he's gonna be on a major league roster this year.
You don't think so?
I don't know, man. I think he'll get an I think he'll get an invite. A minor league contract with a major league invite.
The invite is a freaking like just small envelope, like an invitation you get to a kid's birthday party. Well, you know what I think is, I think Tim Anderson's probably gonna be playing overseas somewhere, right? I don't see him getting a contract anywhere right
No,
now.
that's a Man, after he got beat up, he has just not been the same dude.
After he got beat up.
He got beat up.
Yeah, he did. That punch from Jose Ramirez was felt around the world.
I mean, I know there was a lot of other things going on in his life, but it all coincided with it, the culmination of it was Ramirez knocking him out, and that was done. He was done after that.
Yeah, that was. I mean, that was all over ESPN with the down goes Anderson call from Tom Hamill, who, by the way, is going to the Hall of Fame. He's a great announcer.
Yeah.
Ford C. Frick Award winner. Well deserved.
And Tim Anderson's not that old.
No, he's 31, 30, 31.
31.
Yeah. Feels like just yesterday he was like one of the exciting faces of baseball. It's just crazy. Is Eloy Jimenez gonna get a deal anywhere?
I'm
It,
sure
cause
he will. Somebody's gonna try to take a flyer on him just because the potential power. It's gonna be who is the guy that the Cubs let walk? And then he did really well for the Royals.
who the Cubs let walk?
Yeah, like several years ago. He was the Cuban player.
Oh, Soler?
Yeah, Jorge Soler. I think it's going to be one of those situations where, somebody's going to take a flyer on him, and maybe he ends up being that guy that can hit home runs, but it's not necessarily good.
Well, maybe, yeah, this year it seems likely, but if not much happens this year, I feel like Eloy Jimenez screams he's going to go play in Japan at some point.
You want to play guess what Tim Anderson's slash line was last year for the Marlins?
Sure. Okay. I'm going to guess 205, 290, 310.
You ready for this?
Yeah.
214 batting average, 237 on base percentage,
Oh, dear God.
226 slugging,
Oh.
463 OPS.
Oh.
Do you know what his
Why did oh.
you know what his OPS plus was?
No.
27.
Wow, I gave him way too much credit. Man, he was such an exciting, fun player for several years. A lot of those guys were in 2020, 2021, even 2019 when they were first coming up. Eloy hit 30 home runs in his rookie year. Tim Anderson was winning batting titles. Luis Robert was looking so promising, like one of the top players in baseball. Yoan Moncada looked like in 2019 he finally found that superstar swing. I mean, all those guys, now they're either out of the league or you're not even sure they're going to get a job.
Yeah, so compare that to 2021. Tim Anderson batted 309 with a 338 on base percentage, 469 slugging, 806 OPS with a 118 OPS plus. That was 2021. Just a couple of short years later, his OPS plus goes from 118 to 27. His
Brutal.
on base goes from 806 to 463. He had
Brutal.
zero home runs last year and 241 at bats, zero home runs.
Doesn't he only have like one home run over the past like 3 years or something crazy like that?
He in 2021 he had 17, 2022 he had 6, 2023 he had 1, 2024 0.
Yeah.
So seven over the last three seasons.
And one over the last two.
Yes.
Woof.
I mean, you even look at his career average with those last couple seasons in there, and His career 162 game average is 278 batting average, 308 on base, 411 slugging, 718 OPS, and a 95 plus OPS plus.
Yeah.
Man. Ooh. Ooh.
Bills fan puke. Bleh,
It's bad news, man.
oh, hey, we forgot to mention, though, the Palatine Pounder stays in Chicago but goes to the White Sox.
I had didn't even know that was a thing.
Yes, he signed with the White Sox last week. 1 year deal. The Palatine Pounder, Mike Talkman.
Oh, yeah, I did see that.
If you trade Luis Robert, guess who your center fielder is? The Palatine Pounder.
You know, that's actually a solid move.
If he plays well, you flip him at the deadline.
Flip him at the deadline. He's a good clubhouse guy. He's, I just think it's a solid pickup. It's the lowest of low risk.
Yeah. It, why not?
Yeah, so I don't know. Do we have anything really with the Blackhawks to talk about?
I'll just have this footnote here. We could talk more about them next week, but Connor Bedard is scoring again, scored that game winner the other day, so that's nice to see.
Yeah, and when the trade deadline comes, they're going to make some trades probably. And they're not very good, but
Yeah.
it is what it is.
Good summary, yeah.
I don't know what else to say. It's a bummer that Ovechkin's not playing against them tonight.
No. Oh, hey, there is one bit of breaking news with the White Sox.
What's that?
Guaranteed Rate Field has been renamed to Brrr Rate Field.
Oh, okay. But yeah, I mean, Ovechkin, I wish he was playing because he was on such a streak to start this season
I know. He was
that
leading the league in goals.
I mean, he was like a goal and a half a game player for a minute.
Yeah.
It was
At age like almost 40.
is if he kept anywhere near that pace, he would break the record this season.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
So I'm rooting for that. I want to see it. And then you've got the Bulls. Not
Yeah,
Bulls.
they're there.
They're there.
They're
Yeah.
there.
Excuse me. Yeah, Josh Giddey got hurt. I don't think
Yeah.
anybody really cares.
Buzelis is showing some promise.
He
That's
is,
cool.
and Vooch is drawing some trade interest.
Yep. Trade him while he's hot.
Trade, just don't trade him. What I don't want to happen is to trade him for a protected pick. Because then they're going to wind up the never collecting on it.
Yeah. No thanks.
But quickly looking at Tankathon is the Bulls. The Bulls right now would be the 10th best odds. The Blackhawks would be the second best odds to get number one pick. Man, Nashville is bad.
Yeah, you talk about far and away the biggest disappointment.
That team is, and the Blackhawks had for a minute had that number one seed, pretty locked up. And Nashville's like, nope, we're coming and we're terrible.
Yep.
And then the Bears are a top 10 pick. Those are our
That's our teams.
those are our teams. Wonk, wonk. Is there anything else you wanted to mention?
Nope, I think I've said my piece.
I think that's going to do it for this episode of Bill Swirsky Sports Talk Chicago. I want to thank everybody so much for listening. Please hit subscribe however you listen to podcasts, whether it's iTunes, Stitcher, YouTube, Google Play, Spotify, etc. Share this podcast with your friends. That would grow the show. Follow us on social media at Swirsky Sports, facebook.com/SwirskySports, SwirskySports.com, or ShyFanPat2 for Alex on Twitter /X, or AlexanderJPatCreative.com for all the cool stuff that Alex does. And again, thank you guys so much for listening. And until next time, bear down.
Cubs win! What a lucky break! The good Lord wants the Cubs to win!
We thank Ditka and God for all they have provided.
Cubs win! Cubs win! Cubs win!
Oh, I don't want her. You can have her. She's a Packer fan. She can't fit in my van.
And she looks like...
Remember, New Yorkers, smoking crack is not legal on the plains.
Bears, 31 to -7.
The Bears!
Oh, when the Bears go bearing down...